sit and close her eyes and use her imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we'll discover Danger with Dr. Danfield. But coming up first on the lighter side, it's the Jack Benny program. Jack Benny's show spans some 23 years with great success all along the way. In the early 1930s, Jack was a top stage headliner when columnist Ed Sullivan invited him to appear on the CBS interview program. Benny's routine was such a hit that NBC Blue offered him a show in May of 1932, which became a solid hit. Don Wilson, after stints as a salesman, singer, and sportcaster, became Benny's announcer in 1934. Eddie Anderson, the gravelly-voiced black comic who became known to the world as Rochester, was originally signed for a one-shot appearance as a Pullman porter in 1937. The character of Mary Livingston was created within the first couple of years. After auditioning several actresses for the part, Benny gave the role to his wife. On CBS, Benny continued the 7 p.m. Sunday format until May of 1955, his last live broadcast on radio. Return with us now to those fabulous days of yesteryear with The Jack Benny Show and Mr. Mortimer's Party from May of 1940, another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, then we went. Can you top this? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Marr, Jameis, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so. Dio, vodio, dodio, do.
Program coming to you from Hollywood, California, starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. The orchestra opens the program with Let's Have Another One. One played by the orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Charles D. Mortimer of General Foods happens to be visiting the coast. So without further ado, we take you to Jack Benny's home in Beverly Hills, where Jack is giving a dinner party in Mr. Mortimer's honor. Here we go.
I look at you and what do? I can't speak, I can't sleep, I just sigh. I look at you and all I can sigh is my.
Rochester, we should watch what you're doing. I want this finished before Mr. Charles G. Mortimer gets here.
I'm doing the best I can, boss.
Best you can. You started to give me this haircut 40 minutes ago. You haven't even got the sides done.
Well, when I get to Death Valley on top, I'll go faster.
Oh, my hair isn't so thin. I may have one little bald spot up there about the size of a quarter.
Take a look in this mirror, boss. Inflation is set in.
Whoop! Rochester, that tickles. What are you doing back there?
Your collar is frayed. I'm trimming that, too.
Never mind the collar. Just shave my neck and get this over with. That's probably Miss Livingston. Come in. Oh, hello, Mary.
Well, what in the world's going on here?
Rochester's giving me a haircut. Sit down and read that Police Gazette. I'll be with you in a minute. Mr. Charles G. Mortimer ought to be here soon.
You're certainly putting on the dog. Flowers all over the house, cigars on every table.
Well,
I can't understand why you're so worried about your option. He'll probably renew it.
Mary, I'm not worried about my option. I do as much for any guest.
Well, I'll be darned. Look at that picture you got over the fireplace.
What about it?
It used to be September Morn, and now it's Mr. Mortimer.
Now, wait a minute. That picture above my fireplace wasn't September Morn. It was Napoleon at Waterloo.
Well, he had a gorgeous figure.
Oh, stop. Ooh, Rochester, be careful of that razor.
Okay, where's iodine, boss?
Iodine? Did you cut me again? Rochester, did you cut me again?
I'll just tighten your necktie. That'll stop it.
Never mind that. Put a Band-Aid on it.
Okay.
And hurry up. Gee, I hope Mr. Mortimer will find the house all right.
How can he miss it? You've got a welcome mat that covers the whole front lawn.
Well, I think the occasion warrants it.
There you are. I'm all through.
Now, wait a minute, Rochester. Don't cheat. I want some bay rum on my face.
Not today, boss.
Rochester, do as I tell you.
Well, if I use the bay rum, what are we going to have for the cocktails?
Cocktails? Have you been putting bay rum in my cocktails?
Boss, rum is rum, no matter what's in front of it.
Well, I don't want those kind of cocktails today. Mary, how do I look?
Let me see. Gee whiz, look how Rochester trimmed your sideburns.
What's the matter with him?
You look like Cesar Romero on one side and Waukegan Joe on the other.
Oh, yeah? Well, Rochester, take that razor and make them both Waukegan.
Okay.
Heavens, I hope that isn't Mr. Mortimer already. Come in. Oh, hello, Don.
Hello, Jack. How are you, Mary?
Hello, Don.
Have a seat, Mr. Wilson. There's nobody ahead of you.
Now, cut that out. And listen, Rochester, after the party starts, if I catch you running around with your shoe-shining outfit, you're fired.
But there's a payment due on my yacht.
I don't care if there is. The idea of buying a yacht at $2 a week. Well, it'll be 40 years before you own it.
43, I'm putting on a poop deck.
I don't care what you're putting on. I won't have you annoying my guests. Gee, I wish Don and the rest of the gang would get here.
Don's right here. You just said hello to him.
Oh, yeah. Sit down, Don.
He is sitting down.
Oh, that's right.
My goodness, Jack, but you're nervous today. I wouldn't worry about that option if I were you.
Who's worried?
Mr. Mortimer will sign you up.
Don, that's not the reason I invited him over here. Who cares about my job? There are other things besides radio.
Sure, with that haircut, you could bring back vaudeville.
Oh, stop with my haircut. Yeah, I hope Mr. Mortimer likes the dinner tonight.
Oh, he'll like it, Jack. Don't worry.
Yeah, I wish Don would get here.
I'm here, Jack!
Oh, yeah. Say, Don, I want to be sure that Mr. Mortimer has a good time tonight. So after the party gets rolling, I wish you'd ask me to do my imitation of a trained seal. People scream whenever I do it at parties, you know?
Oh, Jack, you're not going to do that silly thing, are you?
Silly? Why, that's the funniest bit I've done since I used to put a lampshade on my head and pretend I was drunk. Remember?
Don't you do that trick anymore where you stab yourself with a rubber knife and then pour ketchup on your shirt?
Nah, that kind of stuff is dated. I'll do my seal. Now, don't forget, Don, when I say...
Harvey, Mr. Benny, may I see you for a minute?
Oh, it's you, Mrs. Nichols. This is my new cook, Mary, and a very good one, too. Now, what's on your mind, Mrs. Nichols?
I need some butter. Can I have the key for the icebox?
Oh, of course.
Well, that tops everything. A padlock on your icebox.
Mary, I have $48 worth of caviar in there. Oh, answer the phone, Mary.
Okay.
Come on, Mr. Nichols. I'll open the icebox for you.
Hello? Yes? Oh, Mr. Mortimer?
Mr. Mortimer, give me that phone. Hello? Hello, Mr. Mortimer? This is Jack Benny. What? What's that?
Oh, take it easy. He can hear you.
Oh, yeah. What? Oh, no. No, Mr. Mortimer. The party is tonight. Well, look. Can't you go to the theater tomorrow? Or the next night? The next night? I've invited the whole gang. They'll be awfully disappointed.
What about my butter?
Wait, we may not need it. Well, look, Mr. Mortimer, we're all waiting for you, so do come over. You will? Oh, boy, that's swell.
Tell him to come early and get a haircut.
Come early, Mr. Mortimer, and get married. Okay, Mr. Mortimer, see you soon. You're always welcome at the Chateau Benny. Well, bye-bye. Boy, I was worried there for a minute.
What about that butter?
Oh, yes. Come on, Mr. Nichols. Gee, I wish Don would get here. All right, Mrs. Nichols, you're doing swell. Gee, this stuff on the stove smells good, eh, Mary?
Yeah.
Sure is appetizing. What's in this great big kettle over here, Mrs. Nichols?
That's my laundry.
Oh. Oh, yes. Mary, imagine doing her laundry and preparing dinner at the same time.
Well, it's your own fault for getting a cook from Central Casting.
I guess you're right. Well, come on, Mary.
You forgot to lock the icebox.
Oh, yes, thanks. That must be Phil. Answer the door, Rochester!
I'm shaving Mr. Wilson!
Never mind that! Answer the door!
Okay.
Now, Mrs. Nichols, I'm leaving the dinner entirely in your hands, so do a good job.
You can depend on me, kid.
Oh, that's fine. Come along, Mary.
Sure you don't want a shampoo, Mr. Wilson?
Rochester, cut out that stuff and set the table. What do you think this is, a barber shop?
That ain't the North Pole in the front yard.
Well, go out there and take it down. I warned you about that before. Oh, hello, Dennis.
Hello, Zeke. Where'd you get the haircut?
Dennis, I'm certainly surprised at you.
Well, gee, you look funny.
Oh, I do, eh? Just for that, young man, you're not going to get one bit of caviar tonight. Remember that.
Oh, leave the kid alone, Jack. Why do you let Rochester cut your hair in the first place?
Because he has nothing else to do.
Oh, boss, calm down.
Oh, you don't work so hard. Instead of standing around here, go out in the kitchen and make a tray of hors d'oeuvres.
Hors d'oeuvres? What do you mean?
Make a ham sandwich and cut it in 40 pieces. Now get going.
Okay. Barber, butler, chauffeur, gardener, and now I'm an hors d'oeuvre.
Guy's always complaining when people are around.
Open the door! Open up in there!
Well, the maestro is here. Come in.
Well, hello, Phil.
Hello, Phil. Hiya, Jackson. Where's the punch bowl? Right over there and take it easy.
Hey, what happened to your head?
Nothing happened to my head. I just got a haircut.
Well, that's one thing a man can't do himself. You ought to get a barber.
I had a barber, but he didn't have his heart in it. Now, Phil, when our sponsor gets here, I want you to behave yourself and don't start pulling any of those corny cracks of yours. He won't like them.
Can I tell the one about the old maid that set the bear trap?
No. It's not a bit funny. Besides, it has no point to it. Just keep quiet and we'll all be happy. Now, remember, fellas, I want everybody to be on their best behavior. That's him now. Stand at attention, everybody. I mean, sit down. I mean, answer the door, Rochester.
Yes, sir.
Now, remember what I told you, fellas. Now, smile, everybody.
Pardon me, does Jack Benny live here?
Yes, sir.
Ready? One, two. For he's a jolly good fellow. For he's a jolly good fellow. For he's a jolly good fellow. Mr. Charles G. Mortimer. Hooray! Come right in, Mr. Mortimer. Come right in.
Well, that was quite a reception you gave me.
Did you hear that, fellas? That was quite a reception we gave him. You know everybody here, don't you, Mr. Mortimer?
Oh, of course, of course. Glad to see you all.
Oh, good to have you with us, Mr. Mortimer. Well, well, you come, yeah.
Well, this is great having you with us, Mr. Mortimer. I'm sorry I spoiled your evening at the theater.
Oh, that's all right, Jack. I'd much rather be here with you folks. After all, it's important that we get together once in a while. Don't you think?
Oh, I think. I mean, I think so. Well, come into the living room, Mr. Mortimer.
Thank you. Say, this is a lovely home you have here, Jack.
I'm glad you like it. It's nearly paid for, too. About another year ought to do it. Yep. Yes, sir. lunch, Mr. Mortimer.
No, thanks. I never drink.
That's not going to help any.
I'll say. I mean, Mary, please.
Jack, I can't get over what a lovely place you have here.
Oh, it's simple, but it's homey.
Well, I see you have my picture right above the fireplace.
Yes, sir.
Tomorrow it'll be in it.
Well, now. You know, Mr. Mortimer, Mary always has to be the comedian. She never lets up.
Yeah, she's a clever little girl. Incidentally, Miss Livingston, I want to tell you how much my wife and I enjoy you on the program.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mortimer.
And I'd like to wish you the best of luck on your presidential campaign.
Oh, fine.
That's... Look, you're thinking of Gracie Allen, aren't you?
Oh, yes. I'm terribly sorry, Miss Livingston.
That's all right. Forget it. Anyone can make a mistake, I always say. Huh, Mary?
Shut up.
Yes, sir. Hey, Charlie, come on over here and have some punch.
Charlie?
Thanks, Phil, but I never touch it.
It's good stuff, Charlie. This is what you call Virginia punch. One drink and you reel. Ha, 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 ha. That's a Lulu.
I must apologize for Phil, Mr. Mortimer. He's very corny.
No, on the contrary. I think Phil has a great sense of humor.
Oh, he has. He has. And he's so sophisticated. You know, Mr. Mortimer, sometimes that filthy boy just has me in stitches.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Say, Charlie, did you hear the one about the old maid that put a bear trap under her bed and caught a bear?
Oh, say, Phil, that's a pit. Hey, I was hoping you'd tell that one. You know, Mr. Mortimer, he's a riot.
He certainly is.
Say, Jack.
What?
If the boss likes that kind of stuff, you've got nothing to worry about.
Quiet, Mary. You know, Mr. Mortimer, Dennis, stop standing on your head. Nobody's looking at you. You know, Mr. Mortimer, Mr. Mortimer, you know, one thing about this gang, there's no jealousy or friction here. We've been one happy little family for 6 years. I mean, 5 years. I was thinking of next year.
Jack's right, Mr. Mortimer. We do good to have a good time together and really enjoy our work.
Well, you always sound like it, too. And Don, I want to compliment you especially on the way you handle the commercials on our show.
Thank you, Mr. Mortimer. I realize their importance and how much they mean to our listeners.
Oh, I don't know what we do without dear old Don.
And now that we're on the subject, Jack, I'd like to tell you how good I think your shows have been this year.
Oh, that's very kind of you. Of course, they could have been much funnier.
Then why weren't they?
I mean,
miny, mo.
Mary. Will you have a cigar, Mr. Mortimer?
No, thanks. I never smoke cigars.
Well, then take one home for your wife. I mean...
She doesn't smoke them either.
I know she doesn't. I'm a little mixed up, that's all.
Well, I'd like to have a cigarette, though.
Cigarette. There you are, Mr. Mortimer. Oh, Dennis.
Yes, please.
He's such a polite kid. Dennis, before we sit down to dinner, how about singing a song for Mr. Mortimer?
Well, this is a party. I don't want to work.
Now, Dennis.
Oh, Jack, he doesn't have to sing if he doesn't want to.
But he wants to. Well, Dennis, what's it going to be?
I'm going to sing Nyan, 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 Nyan.
Dennis. If that's not a picture of the same name, you're going to get a good copy. Now, go ahead.
Have you a match, Jack?
Match. Oh, here's a box. I'll light the cigarette for you. Just a second.
Stop shaking, for heaven's sake.
I'm not shaking. Here you are, Mr. Mortimer. There. Sing, Dennis. Sit right here, Mr. Mortimer. Oh, Don, come here a minute.
Yes, Jack.
Don't forget to ask me to do my plain seal later. Yeah.
Hear my song. Night, I'm dreaming of you. Every night I want to whisper, dear, I love you. Hear my song, hear your letter, hear the song that's in my heart. Si alguna vez en tu pecho ay, mi cariño no lo abriga. Si alguna vez en tu pecho ay, mi cariño no lo abriga. Every night I'm dreaming of you. Every night I want to whisper, dear, I love you. Hear my song, hear your letter, hear the song that's in my heart.
Well, Dennis, that was very good, very good. Didn't you think so, Mr. Mortimer?
Yes, that was excellent. I'm really having a grand time here tonight, Jack.
Yes, aren't you? You know, Mr. Mortimer, I've been thinking it's so silly of you to stay at a hotel while you're in town. I have an extra room, and you could just as well stay here at the house with me. Eh, Mary?
Why not? He can afford it.
Mary, I wouldn't think of charging Mr. Mortimer. After all, he's my boss, and I hope he will be for a long time. Now, I think we ought to have a little more entertainment. Eh, Don? Eh, Don?
Oh, yes. Say, Jack, why don't you give your imitation of a train?
A train?
Yes.
I do a train seal. Get the ball, Rochester.
That's the top to my baller pole now.
I won't be able to do my seal act.
Oh, well, don't bother about it, Jack. Some other time.
Well, I ought to do something to entertain. Excuse me a minute.
Of course.
You know, Mr. Mortimer, Jack always tries to be a good host and entertain his guests.
Yes, I noticed that, but he seems so nervous tonight.
Oh, he's always that way. Oh, Mr. Mortimer! Mr. Mortimer, look! How's your party getting along?
Yippee!
Well, I'll be darned. He's got the lampshade on.
How's that, Mr. Mortimer? I was making off like I was drunk.
Oh, was that it?
Yeah. Oh, you'd have got it right away if I'd have staggered. I left that out. Well, here's Mr. Billingsley, our boarder. Good evening, Mr. Billingsley.
Good evening, Mr. Benny. Entertaining again, I see.
Yes, yes. Won't you join us for dinner, Mr. Billingsley?
No, thanks. I'm on the wagon. Hey, good night.
You know, that fellow's quite a character.
On him, the lampshade looks good.
It does at that.
Dinner, sir. There's a lot this time, folks, so don't run.
Oh. This way, my Mortimer. This way, nothing fancy. Just a plain home-cooked meal, that's all.
Hey, Jack, when are you going to speak to him about your option?
Don't bother me now, please. Oh, Mr. Mortimer, the dining room's over here to your left.
Yes, I see the boys digging in already.
You know, Mr. Mortimer, I have something I want to talk over with you, but I feel that the home is no place to discuss business.
I definitely agree with you.
Oh.
Dead end.
Well, here we are. You sit right there at the head of the table, Mr. Mortimer. Yes, that's it. Oh, Rochester.
Yes, boss.
You set the table beautifully, but this is a special occasion. Where's the hand-painted china?
You fired him.
I don't mean our old cook. Oh, do have some caviar, Mr. Mortimer. Don, pass him that big bowl of caviar, will you?
Surely. Here you are, sir. I thank you, but I never eat it.
Oh. Well, take it away, Rochester. Take it away. Now, wait a minute. I want some of that caviar.
Oh, no, you don't. Mr. Mortimer finds it offensive.
Oh, I don't find it offensive, Jack. I just don't eat it.
All right. Take it away, Rochester. Take it away.
What are you going to do? Put it back in the fish?
I'm not going to put it back in the fish. I eat hearty, everybody. I hope you like pheasant, Mr. Mortimer.
Oh, that's one of my favorite dishes.
Good.
Gee, it's hot in here.
Well, Dennis, take your elbow out of Mary's soup. Now, come on, everybody, dig in. Eat, drink, and be merry.
Oh, all right. Can you pass me the salt, please, Jenny?
Yes, sir.
Phil, let me have some of that.
Okay, I'm glad you're all enjoying the dinner. Pass me the asparagus, Don.
Here you are. Say, Jack, is everything going to be straightened out about next season?
Not yet, Don. This is strictly a social gathering. Well, loosen your belts, everybody. There's still plenty to eat. Will you have some more option, Mr. Mortimer? I mean, some more asparagus? Asparagus, Mr. Mortimer, help yourself.
No, thanks, Jack. I have plenty right here.
Pretty good food, eh, Morty?
Oh, it's grand, Phil. Really delicious.
Well, eat hearty, folks. It's right here for you.
Mr. Benny, would you please pass me the mashed potatoes?
Why, yes, I'll... Mrs. Nichols! I wish you wouldn't sit at the table. Your place is in the kitchen.
Well, I'm lonesome, kid.
I don't care if you are. Now, get back there.
I'll go with her.
You sit down. I'm sorry, Mr. Mortimer, but our cook is new here, and I had to straighten her out.
Why, but you're jittery today, Jack. I've never seen you act this way before.
Well, I haven't been feeling very well.
Now, here's the whole thing, Charlie. Jack's worried about...
Phil,
next...
I'll handle it. You just mind your own business.
Oh, yes. That reminds me. Say, Jack.
Yes, please? I mean, what is it? What is it, Mr. Mortimer?
There is something I want to discuss with you as soon as we get through eating.
There is? Goody. I mean, good. Well, first we'll have our dessert, and then we'll go into the other room. Oh, Rochester, bring in the coffee and the apple pie.
Okay, boss.
Apple pie?
What's the matter?
Apple pie for dessert?
Why, what's the...
Oh, my goodness, we forgot Jell-O! We forgot Jell-O!
Well, here I go back to the May Company.
Rochester, you're fired! Get out of this house! What's that?
Don Wilson just fainted.
Well, get some water, quick.
The heck with the water, the heck with everything. I'm going to kill myself.
No, no, wait a minute, Jack. Wait a minute. Calm down. It's nothing to worry about.
You keep out of this.
Oh, pardon me, Mr. Mortimer. Pardon me. I'm all excited.
No, Jack, take it easy. The whole thing was just an oversight. It could happen to anybody.
But I can't understand it, Mr. Mortimer. We always serve America's favorite gelatin dessert in this household. Why, there isn't a day goes by that we don't have some tempting and economical Jell-O in one of its six delicious flavors. And believe me, Mr. Mortimer, I always look for the big red letters on the box.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, Jack, because it's nice to know that a fellow as loyal as you will be working for me again next year.
Next year? Well, thanks, Mr. Mortimer. But wait a minute. How do you know I'm available?
Well, I'll be...
So will I. Play, Phil.
The last number of the 34th program in the current Jell-O series. And we'll be with you again next Sunday night at the same time. Say, Mary, wasn't it nice of Mr. Mortimer to sign us up for next season?
Yes, why don't you celebrate and put the lampshade on again?
I think I will. Oh, Mr. Mortimer!
Yippee!
Good night, folks.
The part of Mr. Charles G. Mortimer was played tonight by Russell Hicks. Be sure to listen to The Aldrich Family, heard in most communities every Tuesday night. Consult your local newspaper or radio guide for the day and exact time of the Aldrich Family. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
From May of 1940, it's been the Jack Benny Show with Mr. Mortimer's Party. In a moment, we'll experience danger with Dr. Danfield. And death tunes in at 790 as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Danger Dr. Danfield was notable as perhaps one of radio's worst detective programs ever to curse the airwaves of ABC. It premiered with a thud for a single season in 1946, starring Michael Dunn as Dr. Daniel Danfield, allegedly a brilliant authority on criminal psychology, with Joanne Johnson as his secretary, Rusty Fairfax. The program failed to garner attention or ratings anywhere in the country, canceled by ABC after a mere one season. Return with us now to those fabulous days of yesteryear with Danger Dr. Danfield, Another classic program from the archives of yesteryear.
Danger, Dr. Danfield.
Well, good evening, folks. This is the boy with the goods, Tom Woods, to give you blokes some pokes with jokes that'll make you croak or laugh till you choke. Ha-ha, how am I doing? Ah, yes, I'm going to kill you, folks. Simply going to kill you.
Dr. Danfield, student of crime psychology, has many times provided the police with a solution to a baffling crime. As usual, there is an interesting case for the doctor today. We'll call it Death Tunes In at 790 Kilocycle.
You kill me, Dan.
Why?
Imagine Dr. Danfield going to see a radio show.
Why not? It'll be a good lesson in psychology, just to see what it is that makes people laugh.
By the way, you haven't told me yet whose show it is we're going to see.
Tom Woods.
Tom Woods?
Sure. The boy with the goods, Tom Woods. You remember. Hiya, clacks. Here's stacks of cracks that like the smack.
Oh, no, Dan. Not that corny guy.
Well, why not? There's psychology in corn, too, you know. Probably the most commercial stuff on the air.
Well, okay. I can stand it if you can. Hey, what are we coming in the back way for?
Well, I've got tickets in the client's booth.
What's that?
Well, we're going to see the show from backstage.
Oh, good. I've never been in the back of one of these places before.
Here we are. Yeah, this is the artist entrance.
Hey, Dan, there's a policeman.
He's a special policeman, I think. He's here to see that only the right people get in. You know what I mean? Good evening, Mr. Stevens.
Well, good evening, Dr. Danfield. Haven't seen you since you were doing that lecture program last year. Doing a guest shot tonight?
No, Mr. Stevens, we just thought we'd come in and see Tom Woods' program.
Oh, you ought to have something better to do than that.
Oh, well, we thought we might get a few laughs.
You have tickets, I suppose?
Yes, here you
are. Ah, fine. Well, it's down the hall and to the left, Studio D. That's the last one down the hall. Here, I'll click open the door for you.
Now, thanks, Mr. Stevens.
We've got a lot of better programs.
Tom Woods doesn't seem to be very popular around here.
Huh? You should have his paycheck every week, my dear little girl. You wouldn't care if you were popular or not.
Hey, Dan, I didn't know they had so many studios. I thought everything came out of the same one.
No, indeed, Rusty. Radio is big business.
Hey, Dan, that's Bing. I hear Bing.
I certainly broadcast over the American Broadcasting Company. Yeah, somebody must have opened the door. Hey, come on.
No, I'm going to listen a minute.
Okay. Hey, you better close the door or somebody will get mad.
Gee, isn't he wonderful? Oh, all right. Dan, this is Sunday. I thought Wednesday was Bing's day.
Oh, it is. He's probably doing a guest appearance. Well, come on, let's get down to Tom's studio.
Oh, gee. Isn't radio wonderful?
Yeah. Maybe you'll appreciate it more next time you're sitting home listening in your big easy chair.
George, you are a dirty louse. George, you are a dirty louse. George, you are a dirty louse. George, you are...
What's he doing, pacing up and down and waving his arms?
No, he's just an actor, Rusty, rehearsing his part.
Oh, out here in the hall?
Sure, they all do. Yeah, we turn here. The stage door is down the end of the hall here.
What are all the other doors?
Oh, those are dressing rooms for the stars.
Gee, it's like a theater.
Yep, almost. Yeah, here we are.
Well, Dan, could we go in? Look up there. There's a green light over the door. It says studio in use.
Oh, it's all right. They're just rehearsing. When the show is on the air, the light's red. Yeah, it'd be all right anyway. This is just a sound lock.
Sound lock? Looks like a little hall to me.
Well, it is. You still have to open the door in order to go out on the stage. The door on the far end. Yeah, that's funny. Usually a page girl here to take us upstairs. Oh, well, we might as well go on up.
Well, I thought we were going to see the show.
We are, from the client's booth. It's up here, right over the control booth. Here we are.
Oh, this is nice. Big, soft chairs.
Yes, and we can see the show through that big glass.
Yeah, but we can't hear it, can we? There's a band playing down there now, and I can't hear a thing.
Yeah, wait a second. I'll turn on the loudspeaker.
Where's this Tom Wood?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe in the control booth, or maybe in his dressing room. That's just the band rehearsing its number.
Who's the dame, the one walking around the sound locked door?
Oh, that's Helen McGregor. She's Tom's soloist.
Guess she's going to a dressing room. Say, what did we come here so early for anyway? The show isn't broadcast for nearly half an hour.
Well, we might as well listen to the best rehearsal, at least what's left of it. And if we don't like it, we don't have to stay.
Well, I just assume stay for a while, that is. Nobody else comes in.
Now, Rusty, this is no place for proposing.
Dan, you're a drip.
Stop it! Stop it! Stop the music!
What's wrong with that guy?
That's Tom Woods.
Helen McGregor. She's been killed. She's been murdered. What? She's been killed. She's been murdered. She's in the sound lock. She's lying in the sound lock.
Come on, Rusty. Let's get down there.
Helen McGregor. Why, Dan, we just saw her a minute ago.
Yes. What's the matter? What's going on here?
Helen's been murdered. I just came in here and...
Who are you? I'm Dr. Danfield. Here, let me take a look.
Just a minute. What are you doing in here? This is a broadcast studio known as...
I have tickets for the client's booth. In fact, I'm a friend of the sponsor.
No, thousand pardons. I am J. Sheridan Lewis. I'm the producer of this opera.
Yes, yes. And now, if you don't mind, I'll take a look at this poor girl.
Dan, there's a filing spindle.
Oh,
yes, driven clear up to the base in the middle of her back. Well, when have you run and get Mr. Stevens, the special policeman out at the artist entrance?
Joan, will you go, please?
Yes, Mr. Lewis.
Who is she?
Well, she, my dear Dr. Danfield, is June Davis. One of the most excellent script girls in the radio business.
Oh.
I, by the way, taller ought to know.
Yes, yes, no doubt. You know, I wish a few of you people would go back into the studio. This sound lock is rather small.
You fellas, musicians, back on the stage, if you please. Wouldn't hurt you to look over your music anyway. This is radio, you know. Show must go on.
Oh, man. Poor child. Poor child. And might I ask who you are, sir?
That's the writer. Larson Bell.
Yes, I'm the writer, the poor underpaid writer. Without me, the show could never go on.
I can hire writers a dime a dozen. It takes a producer to make the drivel you write live.
Oh, drivel, is it? All night long, I sit at my typewriter staring at blank white pages. And then the words come. And what happens? A bunch of lousy actors stink them up.
Well, if you're through with your mutual admiration, I might remind you there's a girl lying here who's dead. Murdered with a filing spindle.
Huh? Ah, yes, the poor child. Poor child.
Good heavens, I got to get another singer. Hey, Joan, where are you? Wait. Oh, going out to get a car.
Yes. Mr. Bell, you say you're the writer?
Yes, indeed. Since I took over the show, the rating went up 5 points.
Well, I'm afraid this little event wasn't in your script. Or, was it?
Yeah, what do you mean, sir? I'm not writing murder mysteries.
Here's Mr. Stevens.
Oh, Dr. Danfield. Miss Davis says there's been a murder.
I'm afraid so, Mr. Stevens. Do you want to take over?
Well, no, not me. I think the city police. Poor Miss McGregor. She was a nice little type.
Then you don't mind if I go on with my investigation?
Oh, no, indeed. I wish you would.
Very well, thank you. Now, first of all, I want a little information. Which one of you knew Helen McGregor the best?
Well, I did.
Oh, you all did, huh? Then I better take you one at a time. You, Sheridan Lewis.
Jay. Sheridan Lewis. That's the place.
Very well, Jay. How well did you know Miss McGregor? Oh, by the way, Rusty, will you take some notes on this?
Okay.
Mr. Lewis?
I know her very well. I hired her for the show. I picked her up when she was singing in a cheap nightclub. I developed her and made her into the star she was.
I see, a modern Machiavelli. She must have been very grateful to you for all you did.
Quite the contrary. She didn't have an ounce of appreciation in her. When I made her a star, she demanded more money of me. I made her what she is today.
I hope you're satisfied.
Rusty, please. Hey, go on, Jay Sheridan.
That's about the sum and substance of it. Helen McGregor was an over-aspiring, viciously ambitious, nasty little cluck. Everybody in this entire company hated her.
That, Mr. Lewis, is a dirty lie.
Shut
up. I'm the star of this show, and I can change producers just by snapping my finger. Remember that, Jay Sheridan?
Well, of course. Tom, I had no idea that you didn't feel the same as the rest of us.
Well, you'd better speak only for yourself.
Go on, Tom. Tell me more.
Helen was a sweet, lovable little kid. She
She was a fine performer, a great artist, and we all loved her very much. That is all except our great producer here. He didn't like her because she wouldn't let his hammy direction louse up her work.
Now, careful with those remarks, or by Harry, I'll quit this show flat. I'm only to remind you that I have another offer from Burton, Button, Benson, and Ball.
The only offer you'll ever get will be from our sponsor offering you a 10 years vacation with no pay.
If you don't mind, boys, you can carry on your love feast after we've cleared up the murder. Anything more you care to tell me, Mr. Woods?
Yes. Helen was a great little girl. I'll never forget how she used to smile when I'd introduce her to the audience. I'd say, here she is, folks, a pill for your ills, a frill that will thrill, with a voice that will thrill. Believe me, folks, she will fill the bill. Aha! Yes, sir, and then she'd give me a lovely smile. Well, I had as much to do with her success as Jay Sheridan here.
Yeah. I wish I really did have that offer.
Mr. Bell, as the writer of this show, is there anything you can add to our little character study?
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. I'm rather inclined to go along with Jay Sheridan. I gave her beautiful lines to read. She couldn't read one of them. No soul, no sense of time.
Oh, then why did you give her such beautiful lines?
Because she insisted. She fancied herself a great comedian. Oh, brother, how she could muff the snapper on a gag.
Ah, the audience loved it, though. I always saved the joke with one of my ad-libs. For instance, I remember the time that...
Go on, Mr. Bell.
Yes, and that's another thing. The way Tom Woods here played along with it. Yes, I've got a hunch.
Hey, look, I can get another writer, too.
Tell me, are any of you three men married?
I'll say.
What's that, Miss Davis?
I'll say they're married, and they bring all their relatives down to see the show, and they all sit in the control booth. Every Sunday night, it looks like an Iowa convention. Jay Sheridan has six.
Miss Davis, you're fired.
So what? Of course, Larson Bell isn't married, but he has the same ideas. He keeps leaning over my shoulder while I'm timing the show, breathing down my neck and sticking his nose in my ear.
Miss Davis, you're fired.
I quit. Tom Woods' wife, she's always here, too. Comes down to look after his honey boy and see that he goes right home with it. Not anywhere else with Helen McGregor.
Joan, you're fired.
Fine, and I'll get out right now. Leave you the time script of the dress rehearsal. And now, goodbye. Thank heavens I have got an offer from Burton, Button, Benson, and Ball.
Yeah. Hand me that script, Rusty, the one with the timing on it.
Oh, sure, Dan. Here you are.
Let's see. Yeah, the timing on this script ends where the orchestra stopped when Tom here found the body. The show had been in rehearsal just 13 minutes and 30 seconds.
How do you know so much about radio shows?
I used to do one. The musical number was right after the commercial, so according to this timing, the commercial and the band number ran just about 5 minutes.
That's right. We always figure them to run just that.
Now, about a minute before the body was found, Rusty and I saw Miss McGregor walk into the sound lock here, so she had to be killed within that minute. The last minute of the band number.
Well, that definitely sets the time of the murder.
Yes, within a minute. So let's see where everybody was during that last fatal minute. Now, I have a theory that Miss McGregor was killed the second she stepped into the sound block. Then the murderer left, either to have the body discovered by someone else or to discover it himself later.
Well, I was,
Yes? Where were you, Mr. Woods?
I was in my dressing room, changing my shirt.
I see. And where were you, Mr. Bell?
I was down in the script room, writing a new scene for the show. Woods couldn't read the beautiful scene I had, so...
Yes. How long was the scene?
About 2 minutes. It was 2 full pages of the manuscript.
Only 2 minutes?
Well, it took me about 10 minutes to write it.
Mm-hmm. When did you leave the studio?
When the commercial started.
I see. How about you, Mr. J. Sheridan Lewis? Where were you?
I see here. Why should you suspect any of us? It could have been June Davis, the script girl, just as likely. Seems to me she was in an awful hurry to get out of here.
A very good point, Mr. Lewis. But I'll tell you why it couldn't have been Miss Davis. Because she had her timing marked right here on the script, clear up to and beyond the time of the murder. I'm sure that the engineer in the control booth will swear that you never left the booth. Now, come on. Tell me where you were.
Well, tell the truth, I did leave the booth.
I had
a few minutes during the band number, so I walked down to the end of the hall to get a drink of water.
That's very interesting. By the way, will you lend me your stopwatch?
What for?
I want to take each one of you and reenact just what you say you did. I want to time your alleged movements down to a split second. Because this is one murder where seconds are going to count.
Yeah,
In a moment, we'll return for the third act of Danger, Dr. Danfield. But first...
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now back to Michael Dunn for the third act of Danger, Dr. Danfield.
Come along, Rusty. I want you to check the time with me.
You bet.
Script room's down the hall here, past the dressing room. About 50 feet.
Fine, fine. Just walk naturally, Bill, like you did when you came down here before.
This is the script room, Dr. Danfield.
Good, good. Let's go in.
Now, I wrote the new scene on that typewriter right there.
Sit down, please, will you, Bill, and type off a few lines of the new scene? Do it exactly as you did before, please.
Okay.
That'll be enough. I can just close enough by the time I put you to write those two lines. Now, do you have the first copy?
Mm-hmm, certainly. Here you are.
I just want to compare them to see that you are really writing the same stuff. Mm-hmm. Identical. Now, by multiplying the time taken to write the two lines, it must have taken you at least 5 or 6 minutes to do the whole job. Yeah, that's enough. I'm satisfied.
Ah, well, thank goodness.
Well, the person who did this job couldn't have been gone from the studio that length of time. I'll just keep these two copies for a bit, Bill, if you don't mind.
Perfectly all right. Have to use the old stuff now, and we won't have time to have it mimeographed.
Huh? Well, come on, we'll go back to the studio.
Okay. You know, this ought to give me a good plot for a screen story. Then I could sell it for pictures.
I thought you didn't write murder mysteries.
Well, I could punch it up with a few gags. You know, I think that's what these mystery stories need. A little comedy here and there. Most of them are too dull. My God, that's a great idea. I'm going to speak to my agent about it.
Yeah. Here we are. I see you're all out in the hall. I don't blame you.
The body was getting a bit depressing.
Come on, Mr. Woods, you're next.
Aha, Tom Woods, the boy with the goods. Yes, sir.
Tom, you say you went to your dressing room.
Yes, indeed. The first one right down the hall here.
Oh, well, wait a minute just a second. Let me start my watch. There. All right, come on.
It's a star's dressing room. Always the first.
I want you to do exactly as you did before. Don't forget I'm Tommy.
In here. Hi, honey.
Hi, Blanker.
Fluffy, please. Helen McGregor has just been murdered.
Oh? Thought I heard some commotion down the hall.
Is that all you got to say?
I make believe that I loved her when I don't.
Start changing your shirt, will you please, Tom? You can talk while you're changing.
There.
Believe? Oh, I don't mind, Barry. I'm sure Tom won't. Who are these guys, Tom, your new agent?
Dr. Danfield and Miss Fairfax. He's investigating the case.
Oh, cops.
No, not exactly cops. I'm a psychologist.
We should psychoanalyze Tom, then. Find out why he thinks he's every dame's young dream.
Fluffy, will you shut up?
So McGregor's dead, huh? Wonder who she double-crossed.
Well, Mrs. Woods, was your husband here in the dressing room from the time he came in here to change his shirt and the time he went back to the studio?
You're darn right he was.
Well, how about you? Did you leave, even for a minute?
Certainly not. Always have to tie the big lug's tie. Come here, baby, I'll do it. Always as helpless as a kid.
What's all this bad blood between you and Helen McGregor, Lucky?
She'd done her best to break up me and Tommy's home.
Did you ever stop to think that perhaps Tom helped a little?
Sure he did. What do you think I come down here every show day? Certainly isn't to listen to Tom. Hear his stuff all day long at home. Believe me, dearie, take my advice and never marry a guy who thinks he's funny.
Very interesting. If you've changed, Tom, we'll walk back to the studio.
Well, maybe now that McGregor's dead, I can stay home tonight. No, I guess I won't either. They'll have to get another singer.
Come on, Tom.
See you in a control booth, honey.
You know, Tom, you and your wife had better stick together. It wouldn't be very hard for a good prosecuting attorney to figure out that either one of you had a very good motive for this murder.
I wouldn't kill a flea. And as for Fluffy, well, she's nuts about me, but she wouldn't kill a gal. She'd scratch her eyes out.
Here we are. Now, let's see. That took exactly 3 minutes and 32 seconds.
Ah, what does that prove?
I'll let you know after Mr. J. Sheridan Lewis and I take a little walk. Cummings, Lewis?
I don't know why I should have put up with this tomfoolery. I have a show that's got to go on about 10 minutes.
You better come along or you won't be here when it does go on. Or maybe you'd rather have Mr. Stevens here prod you a bit.
Oh, all right. But my sponsor will hear about this.
Yeah. Now, according to your statement, Jay Sheridan, when the murder happened, you were out getting a drink of water.
That is correct.
Where?
Down at the water fountain, the far end of the hall.
In the long hall?
Yes. Hi, Jimmy. That was Jimmy Phillips.
Yes, I recognize.
Say, if you want any proof that I did come down to take a drink, you can ask Jimmy. He was taking one at the same time. Brother, when he gets hold of this, will his program be popping?
Yes, I can imagine. Why didn't you use this water fountain right here?
Because it's broken.
Oh.
You know, this murder may turn out to be a good thing after all.
How can murder ever be a good thing?
Well, with all the publicity we'll get, I'll bet we'll run our hooper up to at least an 18.
Well, here we are at the fountain. If you'd be so kind, Jay Sheridan, take a drink. Fine. Now we'll walk back.
This is all very silly.
I'm doing this for your benefit, Mr. Lewis. One of you three is guilty of murder. This is the only way I can prove that two of you are innocent. Of course, you could save me a lot of trouble by confessing.
But I'm not... No. Go ahead, I won't raise any more.
Yeah, that's better. Tell me, did your wife have any objections to the special tutoring you gave Mr. Gregory?
If you know women, you know she did, Dr. Danfield.
Uh-huh. You couldn't by any chance have gotten in a bit too deeply with your protege. Deep enough that to keep peace at home, you were forced to get rid of her?
My dear Dr. Danfield, I am a man of the world. I have been around.
Yes.
I may play around, but I never allow myself to become too deeply involved in anyone.
Yes, I rather imagine you were that kind of a character.
No,
save it. Here we are back again. Well, that concludes my little experiment, gentlemen. Oh, by the way, Lewis, that took exactly 3 minutes.
Yes, that should be about right.
Now, I've taken an exact timing of your movement since you left the control room. You, Mr. Bell, were writing a scene for the show. The time for that was between 5 and 6 minutes at the very least. Therefore, if your story is correct, it would have been impossible for you to be here in the sound lock at the time of the murder.
Well, thank you. Never leaves me no end.
And now for the boy with the goods, Tom Wood.
Yes, sir.
Well, according to your story, you were in your dressing room changing your shirt. Fortunately for you, your wife was also there, and she corroborates your tale. That timed out at exactly 3 minutes and 32 seconds. So, you couldn't have been here at the time of the killing, either.
Good old Fluffy. I knew she'd come in handy sometime or other.
So, that leaves J. Sheridan Lewis. Now, according to Mr. Lewis's story, he was down at the water fountain getting a drink. That took exactly 3 minutes, according to the very best stopwatch. So, J. Sheridan couldn't have been in at the swaying.
Yes, but...
Unless one of you is lying, none of you could have killed Helen McGregor.
And now back to Michael Dunn for the conclusion of Danger, Dr. Danfield. I said that unless one of you was lying, none of you could have killed Helen McGregor. But one of you is lying. You worked this out very well, Mr. Larson Bell.
Me? What are you talking about?
You say you don't write mystery stories, but you should. Your plot on this one was almost foolproof. All except the one thing that murderers always forget.
Oh, but I couldn't have done it. I was writing my script. You said so yourself.
I said you couldn't have done it if you were telling the truth. I don't know what your motive was, Bell. That'll undoubtedly come out with further investigation. But there was one little mistake you made that proved conclusively that you were lying.
Well, I can't see where.
These two pieces of manuscript, Bell, the new scene you were supposed to be writing, they were written on different typewriters.
That still doesn't prove...
Oh, yes, it does. That and a couple of other things. Lewis couldn't have done it. He did go to the water fountain, and he has Jimmy Fiddler to back him up. Tom Wood did go to his dressing room to change his shirt. His wife substantiates that. But you, Mr. Ryder, went to the script room.
I did write that scene.
Yes, but you wrote it last night at home on your own typewriter. Now, when I asked you to write a couple of lines of the same scene on the typewriter in the script room, you did so willingly, thinking that the time element was all I was interested in. But you didn't notice that the typewriter in the script room is an old one, with old-fashioned pica type. They don't match at all, Bell, not one single letter.
Yes, but the time...
The time, of course. It only takes 20 seconds to walk from the studio down to the script room, Bell. That was plenty of time for you to kill Helen McGregor and get back to the script room before any of the others got back. You had a full minute, you know, Bell. Mr. Stevens, take him out and send him over to the police.
Yeah.
Come on.
Come on.
Oh, Dan, I've got to say it again.
so wonderful.
Yes, and so isn't the stopwatch, Rusty. In this case, it trapped our murderer.
Dan?
Yes?
By that same stopwatch, how long is a radio kit?
Exactly 5 seconds, Rusty. Count.
From January 12th of 1947, it's been Danger, Dr. Danfield, with Death Tunes In at 790 kilocycles. I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today, but join us again next week at the same time and invite a friend to listen. Together, enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio.